Luca, and it's nice to meet you and nice to have such a group here that's from different backgrounds and students and game industry people here. I will start immediately my presentation, but just a little bit about what you just did here. There's people from game industry here. There's definitely people here that are way more experienced than I am in this industry, and then there's student, etc. But have to remember that today this industry, has been there's a yet another experienced guy coming in and making me nervous. This industry has been changing all the time, and maybe during the last couple of years, the change has been even more rapid and more the bigger than ever. So it doesn't matter what you've done 10 years ago. It only matters what you're going to do or what you've done within the past 3 months. So that's kind of the lesson, one of the lessons I have definitely learned. So we're doing game monetization design course here, and I will explain you a little bit why we're doing this and what is the background and doing this, and what is the background for the whole Finnish gaming industry altogether. My presentation will be quite general, so feel free to ask me, interrupt me, or comment. There is I'm going to explain you something about the business models that has been and there still are, and so on. And I know that in the audience there are people that have been working here. So if I'm wrong in some way or I'm missing something, please interrupt me. I'm also trying to be general because I want to. I don't want to go into much detail because 2 hours is not going to be enough. And as this industry, there's so many possibilities and so many ways to do this that it would be impossible for me to explain all those possibilities within a day, and I don't even know all the possibilities myself. But I'm originally from Lapland, and I studied in Coventry University business and marketing. I didn't have any demo scene background into the or any kind of hobbying of the gaming before I started my professional career. But when I was studying in Coventry, my aim was somewhere in Deutsche Bank or McLaren or something like that. Coventry University was very famous for its engineering, so we did a lot of cooperation and coursework with McLaren and that sort of companies. Well, after that, I finished the studies and graduated BA. I started working in Lapland for the European Union-funded project, which aimed to create game and content industry business to the Lapland area. I didn't know anything about gaming or films, only that I played games and watched films, so I needed to Google everything I started doing. So, but anyway, I was really enthusiastic, as you are when you graduate. You want to show people that what you're capable of doing, and that you're really motivated and that you can really change the world. And when the project became closer to end, it was a year and a half project, I started feeling that now that I've talked that there should be these companies and this kind of business, I need to start one of my own. And then I started Lapland Studio without really knowing where I was going to. So as I didn't have any experience myself to program or to make any art, so it was like a really base jumping without even seeing that there is earth or without parachute. And in Lapland Studio I did lots of different kind of stuff. I produced music videos for Nightwish and Lordi, and I did lots of special visual effects in Europe. Also some stuff in Hollywood, very, very small stuff, but still. And then I did a lot of, our company did lots of outsourcing work for different game development companies, especially in Finland, companies that I'm going to be speaking about later today as well. And then the last 3 years, from 2009, beginning of 2009 until 2012, we did games. We did Nintendo WiiWare game, and we did about 10 iOS games and one PC title. And then Laplace Studio went bankrupt, and people usually want to ask, but they don't dare to ask that how, what kind of a bankrupt it was. And for me, it was a kick-ass bankrupt, meaning that I really made big debt, and I was really taking the hit for the all the debt and all the money, and I was really in the shitstorm of consequences, as you say sometimes. And in 2012, once the bankrupt was like in effect, I was happy that my experience was acknowledged, and then I started working for the Ministry of Employment as a head of creative industries, and did lots of reporting for the ministry about different kind of sectors that there is in creative industry, like films and games and theater and radio and TV and newspapers, etc. And that was a year for me. Ministry wasn't my cup of tea. And then I discussed with Kalle about 7 months ago that there is this kind of ideas in Aalto University, and there was also lots of other people involved that the gaming business definitely needs a business education started here at the capital area, and so I got involved with this one, and I'm also now CEO part-time in a company called Fragment Production, which is doing games. So why we are doing this course is probably one thing that's because there's been such a good motion in the Finnish gaming industry. Since the 1990s, nearly every year a company has done a globally successful project. Yeah. There's some of these examples are from today or from the couple of years from here, but there's lots of big franchises that have been developed here in Finland. And since I've been in the industry, every year somebody has been asking me that, is this just a hype, or is it going to be dying next year? When Sulake was, a company called Sulake was going a bit downhill a few years ago, people were thinking, okay, this is the end of the Finnish gaming industry. Then there's a company called Supercell and Rovio nowadays. So, but the Finnish gaming industry has really produced big entertainment franchises year in, year out from the 1990s. I guess in terms of revenue, we're talking billions, if not tens of billions of dollars. And again, why we are here, there is lots of opportunities still in Finland. We have lots of talent and know-how in the mobile industry, and the biggest shift probably nowadays in the gaming industry is that while PC and console gaming is not growing as fast, or some might be even declining, the mobile gaming industry is growing really, really fast and really a lot every year. And what we have here is we have this mobile know-how, not only in the gaming companies, but because of a company called Nokia. And there's a long heritage of great gameplay, and technology refers to the demo scene in Finland in 1990s. Group of people just decided to make great graphics or great prototypes. One of the results of that is the Assembly Festival, which is held in August. How many of you know Assembly? So pretty much everyone. And then, you know, nowadays there is lots of talent, not only in Helsinki, but there's about 7 or 8 different locations in Finland, which all of them have 15 to 25 different game development startups. So it's really booming at the moment. And government is helping. Tekes is investing about 10 to 15 million a year into gaming companies. We have challenges here. Of course, if we look at the last year's figures from the Finnish gaming industry, we probably close to 1 billion euros in revenue, but most of that revenue is done in Supercell and in Rovios. Then there is really good companies after that, like Remedy Entertainment, etc. But then the most of the companies are really, for example, the company that I'm running is really peanuts, and really not, if not struggling, but really, really peanuts. But they might, you know, everybody's trying to do their stuff and really thinking that they're going to be the next big thing. But the, really the challenge is that I know that here might be some business students, and this is really, this industry really is an opportunity for business students today, because most of the gaming companies in Finland are really lacking in the business skills and the business kind of thinking. It doesn't only mean game monetization, which we were talking in this lecture, but and these sessions, but also how to run your company and thinking about five-year strategies and how to deal with your profit and loss accounts, etc. So most of the game development companies are really enthusiastic people who just want to make games, and they just forget about everything else, which is cool, but they need business people. And also accelerators and industry mentors, but then free-to-play know-how is really difficult to find free-to-play experts in Finland. I know that personally, and probably these people that are from these game companies also know that if you want to hire a user acquisition specialist, there's three, and they're all hired. If you want to hire a data analyst, I don't know, Jay, is it going to be difficult? It's probably really difficult to find these guys, thanks to Supercell and Rovio and 5 to 10 startups that have gathered funding now. So it's really, really like in Lapland we say pissing into the wind. You can't, you know, you can't find these people. There is no know-how. And to emphasize that, it's also why it is like that is because it's changing all the time. If you have the knowledge today, you might not have that tomorrow if you're not doing it. Here are some examples of Finnish free-to-play games. There is more, but I'm just, there is probably the most famous ones, I guess, at the moment. Sulake, how many of you know Habbo Hotel? Nearly everyone. But I consider myself that this was the first and the biggest Finnish free-to-play game. Am I wrong? Or nobody is? Okay. So I think that that was the probably the biggest, and that's how a lot of the things started. And then obviously everybody knows Supercell and Grand Crew and how many of you know Fingersoft? Not so many. Okay. But anyway, these are the companies, and these are the games. There's lots of, well, you could say that there's lots of paid apps, and you probably have played them. Most famous one is Angry Birds, but there's a lots of Finnish games in the App Store, or different app stores, and different marketplaces. I guess there is thousands, and there's lots of really good ones, and there's lots of companies underneath Rovio and Supercell that have made like decent money and decent living, considering what kind of resources they have.
Ilkka.
Yes?
Awesome Ball is not a company.
Okay.
It's a Goldbox Brothers.
There you go. Having game industry seniors in your lecture is always like shooting yourself to the knee. But yeah, here is just a few examples of what companies there are today. These are all probably making revenue. Not all of them are making huge revenue, but some of them are making millions. Some of them are making a bit more than 10 million. Most of them are making hundreds of thousands of euros per year. But they all share the same thing. It's the passion and the kind of feeling that we're going to be the next big thing. I did a small survey when I was working for the Ministry of Employment, and just to compare the gaming industry and, let's say, the advertising industry. If there is an advertising company in Finland that has 10 million in revenue and 2 million every year in the bank, and I'm asking them why they're not going to Stockholm to gain more business, their answer is, can't, we don't dare. If there is a Finnish game development, and this is like a real life example, there is a Finnish game development company that has zero money in the bank account, but the founders have mortgages their houses, so they have now 35,000, and they're going to live 6 months in Silicon Valley because they are going to be the next Apple or whatever. So this describes the mentality that there is. This is really exciting for me, and probably the people that are here and working for the industry are working for the industry because of this. And I really encourage people to work here because it's, you don't really think about money. You just go with the flow. So now I'm going to go through a little bit about history, and with the history I'm explaining a little bit about what kind of business models there have been and what we're doing here today. And again, I might be wrong, but it all started in the 80s because of this equipment. Who doesn't know what is this? Okay. This is Commodore 64, and of course there was other computers at the time and before that that some people were using, but I guess that this was the most like key computers that really encouraged people to go into gaming. Am I right, Mikko?
Yeah.
I started playing Commodore 64, so that's how old I am. And I think that was the key. And in the 90s, the first companies were founded. I'm not sure if there were companies before, but how I see that how this really started to happen, it was roughly the mid-90s or just before that when a couple of companies were founded. First of all, Remedy Entertainment was founded, and then Housemarque started operation roughly in mid-90s. And these companies, it's great to say that these companies are still existing today, and these companies are doing really great today. So we have a good backbone in this industry. And Housemarque and Remedy have been doing PC, mostly PC and console games, which has been business to business, meaning that they are not necessarily doing transactions with the players directly or in business with the directly to the players. So there's always a distributor or a publisher involved, which handles most of the stuff between the customer and the game, and then the money and on that sort of thing is between the publisher and the company. I will explain that a little bit later. Publishers. Here are some examples what publishers there is today and have been. There's most of you probably know these companies, but there is, if not tens of publishers, there is hundreds of different kind of publishers still even today. Some of them are small, most of them are small, and then there is these really big ones like these companies here. So how does it work? What kind of a business model was there? So back then it was our studio, the developer and the publisher. Publisher would give the studio some kind of a budget. Well, not give, but it's even working today, this model, that you have some kind of an idea of a game, you go to these game conferences or game shows and you try to book a meeting with publisher and you pitch your game on your ideas. And you say that, okay, I'm doing this worm game and it's going to be really huge. You need to give me €150,000 and I'm going to complete the product or something similar. And sometimes, not often, but sometimes you make an agreement with publisher. And the publisher will then give you a certain budget, and publisher will also nominate that within the publisher company there is this person, this producer that will follow your project while you work. And so you're going to start working and doing the game for the publisher. Of course, there's an idea, hopefully, that what kind of player there is targeted and what kind of person should be playing this game. But then there is, and I guess that in a couple of years you can say there used to be retailers which then give money to publisher, like Walmart, but in Finland we have like City Market or Prisma, for example. And then this publisher would then give the games to retailers. Usually it would work so that when we developer would do the deal with publisher would already be in contact with the retailers asking for some kind of premium so that they can, there is this kind of chain already involved quite early stage. And then after the game is done, the retailers will put the game to be sold in City Market or Prisma or Walmart or wherever. And then the money would start coming in. This is kind of the model in general, how it works. There is differences different kind of ways, but this is roughly how it went back then. And there are still examples how it goes today. For example, the company that I'm running today is doing this business. So here's an example. I'm just going to explain you how the money goes in these kind of. This is just one example. There is lots of. Yeah, please.
Can I ask?
Yes.
How the influence the publisher had or has on the games in this?
Publisher. How big influence publisher has in the games?
Yeah.
I think it varies, but for example, in the company that. I'm doing now, they are only giving an overview that, hey, you need to, well, how about doing a fireman game? We're doing fireman games now. So then that was like the original idea how the things got set up. And then, of course, because they have a producer and we have a producer and creative person, then we talk and we kind of, it's a collaborative effort in terms of what kind of game eventually it will be. There is an example. There is another example which I'm not describing here, but there is this kind of we call it in game industry work for hire projects. Let's say that there is this game called Max Payne, and they want to make Max Payne 4. And this publisher, whoever owns the rights for Max Payne 4, and they're looking for somebody to do that. So your studio has the best idea or the best pitch to do that, then that publisher will probably be in quite big control of what kind of game you will be doing, because you will be working for them as work for hire kind of people. But it varies, like I said. So, but here is an example about how the money will go. So I want to do this so that when you start your own company, you already have an idea. I never had. I wish I would have heard this lecture when I started this industry. But here, let's say that the developer gets 100% development budget, 1 million euros from a publisher. This means that the publisher will cover, with that 1 million, you will cover 100% of your costs completing the product, the game, from whatever stage it is when you start discussing with publisher, but very, very early stage. So with that 1 million, you will make the game, and the publisher will receive so-called Gold Master version, which is the game that's going to be ready for shipping. And then you make such kind of deal that this 1 million is considered as a royalty advance, which means that when the game sells, you will then royalties will start coming from retails and the markets, and you will be allowed to have some royalties as well at your development studio. So let's say that the model is here: 100% development budget, 1 million, and 30% of that, and that's considered as 30% of the royalty advance. It means that. if the game you've done the game for 1 million, obviously you paid salaries and whatever costs you've had, but the game, if it sells 1 million, and let's say the publisher gets 1 million out of it, you get zero. If it sells 3 million, you still get zero. But if you get six, if the publisher makes 6 million euros worth of revenue, then you get something like 700,000 royalty. Okay? Which is money still. But if you, when you're having like a really good motivation, you're building your team and you're getting 1 million a budget, you're making the greatest game ever, and you're thinking, oh, this is selling great, you might not still get the revenues you thought you would. This is just one calculation. There's plenty of other, there's probably as many different samples as there is different kind of publishers. Please feel free to interrupt. Yes.
What kind of a royalty scheme does this use?
This means that you get 30% royalties.
Okay, yeah.
But it, why it's like this, the publisher will calculate it so that because you've received the 1 million, that's 30%. So they need to make so much money so that the 30% will equal 1 million before you will make anything. So that's why it's like this. There is differences, but usually there is not any, because I sometimes meet startup companies and game studios still that I'll say that we have the best motherfucking publishing deal ever, that the publisher is really good and they're giving a lot of money to us up front and after that a lot. And when you read that and when the reality hits, usually and always it's not like that. And so one of the reasons why I'm showing this is that you need to really be skeptical and really talk to, let's say, industry people, meet these people that are here in the audience. Okay, here's another example. I just want, again, just to play with your mind. Let's say, again, we have a good budget, 20 million. Okay, in PC and console, if you're doing really big games, it's possible to have this kind of budget. So 20 million for your game. You have a big studio, you will pay all the expenses, all the salaries. You will get decent salaries. Everybody will earn something like more than 2,000 euros. No, I'm joking, maybe even more. And then this is considered as royalty advance for 5% of the royalties. So you have a huge project probably because publisher is paying you 20 million. So they're really thinking that it's going to be big. And you, of course, really think that this is going to be big because publisher is paying us 20 million for it. So you have some kind of a profit margin in there, but still you would expect that there's going to be money coming your way. But the game needs to sell 500 million in revenue so that you will get some kind of, I don't know what to call this, peanuts in terms of royalty. You really get a good living during your project and your production because the budget is fine. But royalties, you will not see anything unless your game, your 20 million game is the Call of Duty. Again, I'm showing you the, let's say, the not so happy examples. There is better examples, and there is still lots of good companies in Finland which make good money. But this is the kind of situation where they were in the beginning, and they're still existing this kind of business. So yes?
Do the publishers fund games and also these free-to-play categories and iOS games, or is it just like console and PC games?
I will come into that, but the question was that is publisher funding free-to-play games or you meant apps?
Yeah.
I would say no. Is there anybody in the audience who might say anything opposite? But there isn't really a publisher today that will pay upfront anything. There's an example coming from. Okay, and then during, well, close to millennium, I can't remember if it was before or just after millennium, but there were these two companies in Finland which spanned off from other gaming companies, and they were called Riot Entertainment. Have you heard about that Riot film, probably? And then there was another one called Spring Toys. Who's heard of Spring Toys? Not so, yeah. They, I guess, from the business perspective, were pretty similar companies, and their story is pretty similar. they were way too early in terms of what kind of devices were back then available for customers and what kind of games they were trying to do. They were having huge parties, as you probably know, but still, from those companies, something new started to happen. I didn't include those companies in my slide. But mobile gaming business really started back then. We have a company called Sumea, and Sumea was, these are not in any particular order, but Sumea was one of the first companies, and people who don't know, Sumea was Sumea was the company owned by the same guys that own now Supercell. So Ilkka Paananen and Mikko Kodisoja were the key people in Sumea. There is a key producer of Sumea in this audience as well, who's now looking. Then Mr. Good Living again, good example. The guys who owned Mr. Good Living are now, some of the guys are the key guys who own the company called Gran Crew. What's this company? Then there was Rovio, of course. Universum was a company which was in Tampere and also then working in Helsinki. And Red Lynx was doing mobile games. Then Digital Chocolate acquired Sumea, and Real Networks acquired Mr. Good Living. And THQ acquired Universum. So in the mid-2000s, there was lots of activity in the mobile gaming business already in Finland. I didn't include Nokia Loco here, but Nokia had a huge influence on why this all happened. It wasn't the only reason, but it had a huge influence. And so here, these companies were dealing with carriers, like, for example, Sonera, or publishers, or OEMs like Nokia or whatever. The business model was, in the beginning, roughly like this. Studios were making games for carriers or directly to the manufacturers and receiving some money from them. And then these companies would sell these games to the audience. But most mobile game studios in the beginning, there were 2 to 3 man companies, and lots of them, not only in Finland. So carriers and manufacturers grew tired dealing with these two-man bands from wherever. So the business model changed again, and publishers again emerged into that this business as well. And then publishers dealt with the carriers, and that's how the games went to the audience. So it's good to understand here that the game developer, you guys, me, have been until that time really far away from the actual consumer or the player in terms of the business. Of course, people been to consumer fairs and so on and have fan base, but still the dealing with directly with your customer has been really difficult. When I started my business, Lapland Studio, in 2005, it was impossible for me to come into the gaming industry because I didn't have any relationship like this. And going directly to there, it was impossible. It was if there's any questions, please interrupt. And during the 2000s, also the PC and console games were growing. The budgets were really growing a lot. I guess that the late 90s, the budget have been somewhere hundreds of thousands or a million. But then during the 2000s, the budget have really skyrocketed in definitely in the console gaming business. And then here comes the other one really key example in Finland. Well, not only in Finland, but a lot of the PC online games became really successful. And in Finland, is there a person that doesn't know what this is? Everybody knows Sulaki. Okay, excellent. So Sulake started, I guess it was 2003, and
earlier.
Earlier.
Yeah, 2001.
2001. Can Taneli confirm?
Yes.
Okay, 2001. It's great to have the there's member from each of these companies here. But yeah, Sulake, from looking from this perspective, became quite popular and received investment from abroad, and was getting a lot of monthly users. And I'm not saying they got 10,000 or hundreds of thousands of monthly users. I guess it was more millions or even tens of millions of users. So it became really big. It was a little bit isolated, I remember, from the Finnish game development scene, that there was this PC and console game guys that were like the real game developers. That's how they thought that they are. And then there was this Sulake, and then these mobile guys that, you know, what are they doing? But Habbo was really big. Habbo was also, is and can be probably considered one of the reasons, again, why there is what there is today. And Habbo was more or less business to consumer, so they were in direct contact with their customers, with their players. They could test something really quickly by prototyping in the game something that this might, if this couch or this asset is working, or if it should be purple or whatever. So that was the kind of the first times in Finland that this shift happened. And what they were doing, they were selling online goods and virtual currencies, etc. Some of the companies were selling monthly subscriptions, and that model still exists. So here is the roughly the how that went. Any questions this stage? If you don't understand anything, just ask me. Then roughly after that, there was this biggest change to date. And can anyone guess what was the change that happened? Yes?
Digital distribution.
No, I'm looking for something specific.
Facebook.
No?
iPhone.
Yes, I have a present for you. Who said iPhone? Yes, I think that most people here that are from the industry can really say that iPhone really changed the things and really opened up opportunity for people, and especially the Finnish gaming folks. Apps, of course. It was business to business and business to customer kind of business in the beginning. There was publishers. There were publishers involved. There still is publishers. If you want to do an app, there are publishers that want your game. But what they're offering is something different than money. And of course, Apple takes its cut. And all the other digital distribution places take their cut, which is more or less always 30%. Here, how it went in the beginning. Again, publishers and then there's this distribution channel, App Store, for example. There's also XBLA and PSN. XBLA is the Xbox Live Arcade, which was the digital distribution channel for all the Xbox owners. And PlayStation Network, PSN, was the similar for the PlayStation owners. And of course, WiiWare. I did a game for WiiWare, which was the digital distribution place for everybody who owned Wii, Nintendo Wii. So you would have to have a Wii connected to the internet, and then there would be an online shop. You'd buy these games online, no more hard copies. And then how the games would go to the audience and how the money would transfer. When I was doing this presentation, I was really at this stage, I was thinking that I can't believe how stupid the game industry has been, that they have tried to avoid this, or it, if it has been like that. But again, there has, in the beginning of the iPhone era, the publishers really got space again. And what publishers would give is sometimes money, but most of the time in this this business, they would say that, hey, you do your game, we will handle all your marketing and PR and your relationship with Apple. So you could say that probably nowadays they give you no budget, but they can take you 50 to 60% of your whatever income your game will make. This varies, but this is the something that that's how they work. They need to earn a living anyway. And sometimes it's really good because like in Finland, most of the game studios are just game studios. They don't know how to handle the PR and marketing. Or they didn't know back then. Even today, it's even more difficult. Here's an example. If a developer spent 100,000 euros to make an app, in the beginning, those apps weren't that expensive. They were. You could have made an app. There was probably this fart app probably cost 1,000 euros to make. But if you made a game for 100,000, publisher would take 50% from the revenue after Apple. It means that you would need your game to sell about 2 million copies, 2 million downloads, in order for you to make some money after your investment to the game. And I know that having 2 million downloads, paid downloads in App Store, it's really difficult. If you have done that, that's really successful thing. So it's very risky business. And in the nearly after the iPhone release, I want to mention this company. Chilingo is a game publisher, then acquired by Electronic Arts. But this was kind of key game publisher for Finland because they started publishing this one game. And I guess, I don't know what people working for Rovio or the owners of Rovio might say, but I guess it was good that Chilingo was there because they were able to help with all the relationship with Apple and so on. And then after what happened with Rovio, a lot of the companies started to really think that we can make our own game and we can publish our own game. I thought that. I did all my games in Lapland Studio so that I thought, okay, I will publish them. I don't need any Chilingo. I can do PR, I can do press release, and I can call different advertising sites that they can run my story. I even did a deal with Wesley Snipes that, hey, he's going to star in my game, and I got a lot of publicity because of that, that's a whole other story, but and so on. I mean, everybody was talking about my game when I was doing that. Snipes went to jail. Even more people were talking about it. It wasn't very good for the development, but still, everybody was talking about it. Still, it didn't guarantee me anything when the game went out in App Store. It got something like 1,400 downloads, which is shit, because we spend so much time with it, and consider that you're spending your time and your money, and you have Wesley Snipes in your game, you probably want to make more than 1,400 from it. So lots of other companies were making these mistakes as well. But this is how the model works, if it works. for some people, for some companies. It worked then, it works now. And there's always an excuse. There's also an exception to the rule. I want to say this example here now, but I've heard about this. Met lots of companies, of course, because the Finnish gaming industry is so that we meet and we share our ideas and we pitch the game to each other. And roughly about 14, 15 months ago, I heard about this game from this guy or this couple of guys, and it was looking really good. I can't say that I'm really an expert about what the games are and what how the game mechanics work, but it was looking for really good for me, and I really saw that these guys, in my eye, have lots of talent, and of course I knew that they have experience. And then they were showing it to me in Schloss and this other guy, and then I asked that, how are you going to do the marketing and all that, because I just had my experience that you can't do it on your own, that's really difficult. And the guy said to me, the game is going to be so good that everybody's going to be start talking about it. Roughly like this. I went from the meeting that, okay, yet another Finnish bad example. Is this going to go to shit? And I really feel sorry for these guys because they spent so much time doing the game. 8-9 months after, there's a game called Badland in all the charts, number one or number two. And I went to this guy, Dishla, saying this example that I really thought that you were going to do shit, but it seems that you won this Apple Design Awards and whatever. I need to really take my hat off. And this is just an example. Why I'm telling this is that there is always an exception to the rule in this business. And still in App Store, if somebody says that it's like this, there's always probably other way. Yes?
Is there no common term at all to the App Store, similar distribution places?
What would it, if it's not App Store, what would you call it? App Store? I'm calling it App Store if it's, or Android Market or Google Play.
But there is no common term.
Is there? I don't know. What is there a common term for App Store?
Like a platform.
Sorry?
Like a platform
store. I don't think I don't think there is. Do you know a game called Badland? Yeah. Play the game. It's good. So then again, something really big happened, and what was this? Can anybody guess? I'll throw, and I will hurt somebody again with this. Anyone can guess what happened after this? Yes?
Free to play.
What?
Free to play. Yeah.
Free to play. No, that wasn't, in my opinion, the biggest impact after, because after iPhone, I think the biggest impact was how everywhere Angry Birds went and how many people started playing these games. Sorry about the picture, but I mean, I was just Googling Angry Birds now, and you can get lots of different kind of Angry Birds products nowadays, not only games, and it's amazing. It's probably a lot in some people's minds, and it's probably too much in some, but it was a really good example, a really good thing to happen for the Finnish gaming industry and the gaming industry in general worldwide, because it really became mainstream. It was easier to explain to your parents about what you do, Angry Birds, similar to that, only less money. So in my opinion, this was like really huge, and this you really have to congratulate what they did and what these people are still doing. Of course, then competitors followed Apple, and there is Android Market nowadays and Windows Phone, etc. There is others. Most of the business is still done in the Apple App Store if you think about the mobile games. So, and then in 2011 till today, free-to-play games have been developed here. I and probably everybody who work in this industry remember when Supercell was founded and when they got their first office and they started doing this Facebook game called Gunshine. I'm not going to tell Supercell's story because it's their story and I have nothing to do with it, and they've done it. I haven't. But that's how I remember that it started. I remember that I was at the time having a game out. I had this unfortunate Wesley Snipes game out and it wasn't doing really well, and I was talking to different people in the States that what should I do, and I remember that some people were recommending that, hey, let's do so that the game is free and there are some chapters that the player can buy after he's completed some episodes, or the player can buy a gun for this character or whatever. I was so going bankrupt at the time that I couldn't concentrate on it, but it would have been wise to have an uncle at the time saying, hey, concentrate on it, it's good advice. But that's how when it started, and Supercell was probably the first ones in Finland. And it really became, started from business to customer thinking, so that the development studios, Supercell, etc., really started to think that this is the group of people that we are targeting with this game, and everything else that we need is irrelevant, but we use it when we need it. So marketplaces and so on were seen as distributors only. Of course, it's crucial when you launch an app that Apple is featuring it, but still these people really focused on the players. Oh yeah, Supercell. And games. Now, if does anyone do you remember that I have sent out this assignment, and there are these games in the assignment, so you need to play these games and analyze these games based on the assignment. Again, after I've spoken about Remedy, Max Payne was a really big game, Habbo Hotel was huge, Angry Birds went through the roof. I don't know how you can describe what these games did, but it's monumental. And it's really good example, because then now we can really say that the industry keeps renewing its skin all the time, and there is all the time new teams and new services and products that will hit the top 10 charts. And in free-to-play business, there isn't really publishers that is working really well. There are publishers that would like to do this, but there isn't really that kind of business model there yet. I don't know if there ever will. And what's the business model? Yes?
Yeah, I was thinking, so what's basically the biggest issue there? Why isn't there, say, a pan-Finnish publisher? Because it seems to be obvious that there's so many game developers who have great ideas, but they don't really know what to do with them after.
Why there isn't a Finnish publisher? Yeah. So the question is why there isn't a Finnish publisher or publisher in it. There is a publisher in Finland at the moment called Playground. I think it is in Finland. Fingersoft is publishing. Yeah, Rovio is publishing now. But it's a good question, and I believe that within the last 10 years, Finnish gaming folks have thought about this same thing. I don't know. I have thought about it, and I don't know the answer why there isn't one. It's yes.
Why did you choose not to discuss social gaming on Facebook? Can we learn anything from Rise and Fall there?
We probably can, but there wasn't. I wanted to have a Finnish perspective in this, and to narrow it somewhere. And for Facebook, we didn't have. It really didn't happen in Finland. There was something that was tried, but I guess nothing really happened in that space.
How similar is the revenue model there compared to the free-to-play games on iOS?
I'm not sure because I haven't done that. I'm not really sure about the pricing and the revenue model. Anything else? So just to describe the business model here, it is quite straightforward. As you play the games, your credit card is registered and you use money and Apple takes its cut and or somebody else and then it's delivered to these companies. It's really good also from a way, if you're starting your own game business, Apple and these channels are really good in that sense that the money comes to your account quite quickly. In the PC or console publishing business, the money might come so that whatever the sales are the first quarter, you might get those revenues into your account a few months after the first quarter. So there's a big lag between the when you finish the project and when you're going to get ever the money in. But with Apple is that, let's say, January money comes in, is it early March or somewhere in February? So quite quickly. And you can see daily how your app is doing and how it's selling. Yes?
Yeah, so is it the same with the Steam, if you think like indie games have obviously there, so is the Steam similar to App Store or is it also
that Yes, we just made a game to Steam and it's pretty much the same. And you can also track the downloads nearly real time there, and the revenue model is more or less the same, and Steam as well presents a huge opportunity for a game developer. There's lots of people that are online all the time. I just checked a few days ago that I was logged into Steam and seeing how these games are performing and. And at the same time, there was 5.5 million people available in the service. So it's really good opportunity. And well, this just emphasizes what I've said before. But this line here really describes it. I mean, today when we say, okay, everybody can do a free-to-play game and make assets that people can buy, but it's really difficult to succeed in this business, and you really need to think about different kind of aspects, and this course tries to answer those questions. My lecture, just an introduction, and give you some kind of basic information about the industry and the business models that there has been. But the people that we're bringing into these lectures from Thursday onwards will give you answers in monetization and marketing and user acquisition, as well as other subject areas that are really crucial if you want to make successful games. And if you want to make games, some people want to make a company like Supercell or even bigger. You really need to think about these things. And these people that are coming here are really senior guys in this business. Like Todd Weidemann from next week is probably one of the best experts in this field. Okay, and now I explained briefly about this industry and this. Yes, question.
Sorry about going back to the previous topic, but just one question concerning the App Store. Business model. For example, Clash of Clans is free to download, but if you buy something in the game, that it's going to go through App Store. But is that percentage the same in the in-game purchasing than just if you just buy the game? Or is there a different royalties?
Yeah.
If you buy the game versus if you buy something.
The answer is simple. Whatever revenue Apple makes, they take 30%. Yes.
All the revenue is going through Apple. I mean, like if there's a news publisher. Like,
sorry?
If there's a news publisher or something, I don't know how to call them. It's phone call.
Yeah.
I guess there's some app that you can read the paper through it as well. And maybe there's a subscription that you need to pay for the subscription of the newspaper.
Yeah, but always through Apple. 30%. The question was like if there is a newspaper like Suomi Kuvalehti, like Times in Finland, if they would have to pay 30% to Apple for. Yes, the answer is yes, and I don't know a lot about that business, but after reading some of the blogs or news about that, that's one of the reasons why so many magazines and newspapers have hesitated going into this business, because they don't want to give 30% away to Apple. I have a friend called Samuli Syvähuoko, who some of the slides, and the next slide is from him, and he found a company called Remedy Entertainment, which was in my presentation earlier. He's really seen as the godfather of Finnish game business. And I got this slide from him. These are just some other opportunities that there are, not just App Store or the ones that I've described here. I just wanted to show this slide here that to give you the idea or the feeling that you can really probably decide that you're not going to do anything with Apple or Android or Windows Phone. You can decide doing Wii or Nintendo or just Steam. There's lots of the game development companies and people who are really thinking that PC free to play is something in the future that needs to be considered. And these are only some. I guess I'm not so familiar with what's happening in Asia, but if you go to Asia, there's probably 100 times that many possibilities. My last slide is, do you have any questions?